Controversy.
What's that?
Controversy over vacation.
Which vacation? Church.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was controversy.
Good morning. Today is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012. It's 9:30 a.m. and the City Council will come to order. How are you doing this morning, Sue?
Very well, thank you.
Enjoying the rain?
Oh, always.
Always. Then you're living in the right place. Can you please call the roll?
Fritz.
Here.
Fish.
Here.
Salzman.
Here.
Leonard.
Here.
Adams.
Here. Quorum is present. We shall proceed, beginning with communications. Can you please read the title to item number 159?
Request of DeLance M. Duncan to address council regarding 1967 state basketball championship game and 2012 state high school wrestling tournament.
Mr. Duncan. Hi, welcome.
Thank you. I want to thank you for giving me 30 minutes to talk.
I think there's a little bit of inflation going on there.
Okay, I'll change it.
Please have a seat.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to present something, but main concern, I wanted to thank this commission. About a year ago, you called it the Veterans Memorial Coliseum. That's its real title. And I'm pleased to see that it still remains that Veterans Memorial Coliseum. And it's used for a lot of things. Hopefully, I have a couple of commissioners, one with a grandson that's going to come over there Saturday evening and see what goes on.
Could you get a little closer to the mic, sir?
We have about 982 wrestlers that are coming from all over the state of Oregon to compete in a two-day tournament. And they're small. We have five tournaments going on at the same time with people that come from every place in Oregon. Big schools like David Douglas, where I happened to migrate years ago, and from Crane, and you name it, they're coming here. And they're good wrestlers. And their parents will be coming into Portland on a lot of them Thursday night. They'll stay Friday, Saturday, leave Sunday. Wrestling people stay and eat. They don't go to a ball game and go home. Or they don't go to the football game and tailgate and then they come back. They stay and eat, and they do utilize Max. We recommend they come in for the pop here. But it's a chance for people to see where that grain goes that they raise and the cattle and where the equipment's built here in Portland. So it's a real, real good thing for kids. And we do need the Coliseum. And we utilize about everything there with the exception of the Winterhawks. And we thank them for helping on it. I really appreciate that and the support we get. We have about 150 girls that help with the tournament, and there is a tournament for the girls Saturday afternoon. We're not as advanced as far as State Oregon, where they have about 160 girls in wrestling. Girls have competed with the boys, but it didn't work too well. The boy was a loser no matter what happened. And there are girls in the Olympics. In fact, a former Oregonian, Lee Allen, has two daughters in California, and they're training for the Olympics. And he's coached women's and girls' Olympic teams himself. But we really like to have people come there and see what goes on.
What time does it start?
It's going to start, the sessions start at 8:30 Friday morning and go to about 9:45 on Friday. On Saturday, they start at 8:30. The semifinals start at 10:30. And then the finals start that evening at 6:30. And we do have the head honcho. I found his name was the Prime Minister of the Royal Rosarians. He happens to be assistant wrestling coach at David Douglas, and he was at your performance out there, or awards ceremony.
And what do you have in the envelope?
Well, what do I have in there? This is a picture of the Coliseum.
Here, hold it up to the TV cameras.
It's 1967 state basketball championships at the Memorial Coliseum, 13,006 people in attendance. Can't say I was there. I was in LeGrand at a wrestling meet. But this will never be again. David Douglas, by chance, won it 53-51 over Jesuit. And I would like
to... Why so pessimistic about David Douglas's chances in the future?
No, not about David Douglas, but in the Coliseum.
Oh. Well, don't be so pessimistic about that either. There's hope out there.
Okay. Well, there's another facility next door I haven't been in yet, but when they have wrestling in there, I'll go.
Good.
But I've talked with Amanda, and I'd like to present this on behalf of the, I use the term private property taxpayers of the David Douglas District, and the superintendent, Don Grotti, who is a real wrestling fan, and we need all the help we can get with that Coliseum and welcome people to Portland. So I'll give this to Amanda.
Great.
And get out of here.
Thank you, sir, very much. We really appreciate
proud
it.
Proud to accept this on behalf of the city. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate it.
Cole did just finish his first year of wrestling, and he loved it, and he's heard all about you. He's been warned.
I will.
Okay, Coach, thanks.
Thank you, sir. Can you please read the title for item number 160?
Request of Mark Hope to address council regarding small business in Portland.
Mr. Hope, hi, welcome.
Well, thank you. Had I known I had 30 minutes, I surely would have prepared a lot more than what I have right now.
Oh, I've lost control of it.
But anyway, to keep it short, and I'd like to introduce myself. My name is Mark Hope, and I serve on Small Business Advisory Council, known as SBAC. But first of all, I'd like to just give you a real brief history of my company, which is Tire Disposal and Recycling, which it's, has its main processing facility in North Portland and employs about 46 system-wide, which is in three states. We have about 31 of those employees that are actually based in Portland. For the last 30 years, we have processed over a quarter billion scrap tires, 14 years of which have been under the Tire Disposal and Recycling banner, a company formed when I bought the regional assets of my former employer. To put that into perspective, that is 166 years worth of the Portland metropolitan area's annual generation rate of 1.5 million scrap tires per year. As a 33-year resident of Portland, 9 years ago, I moved Tire Disposal and Recycling from Clackamas to North Portland. It was at that time I fully realized the level of commitment small businesses have to the city in lieu of the heavy lifting required for taxes, fees, regulatory burden, as compared to the city and county we had just left. That commitment should not be taken for granted. Portland small businesses help to make Portland special, and I know over the years I've had the privilege of interacting with companies or eating in places like Voodoo Donuts, also Cloudburst Recycling, which has fought the long, hard battle for many, many years, and have recently used a small business like Black Cat Plumbing to install a solar hot water system on the house. I would like to thank the city for their recent work in our neighborhood, the Columbia Slough Bridge refurbishment or redeckment there at Kelly Point Park. Infrastructure, specifically roads, is critical for us as we log close to 1 million miles annually, many of those throughout the Portland metro area. This project exemplified a proper notice, of which I think you've heard me talk to several of you before about, to those in the area that were affected by its construction schedules. Mailings were sent out long before the road closure date to forewarn us and provide detour routing for the major route disruption. This example set here should set the standard for all city projects where potential impacts to businesses and neighborhoods may occur. As my tenure with SBAC ends next month, I would like to thank the City Council for creating SBAC as a forum for small business to work with the city so that our voice can be heard. A special thanks to the many bureau representatives who spend time attending our council and committee meetings. Their presentations and insights have been invaluable in developing our understanding of the issues. I believe their time spent with us allows them much understanding of our small business perspectives. And to encourage the council to continue and increase their communication with SBAC in efforts to better understand both intended and unintended consequences, specifically impacts. Many of you know we've tried that. And lastly, I'd like to encourage the council to keep a balanced perspective when it comes to economic stimulus for both small and business, and excuse me, large businesses combined. Again, thank you again for the opportunity to communicate with you today.
Thank you, sir, very much. We appreciate hearing from you. Can you please read the title for item number 161?
Request of Wade Varner to address council regarding enforcement for business outside of the clubs.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. My name is Wade Varner. I'm the founding director of Homeless Against Homelessness in Oregon, and I'm here today to talk about canopy wars. The city has seen, and the police department has not enforced the canopy law outside of clubs and businesses here, but it took 2 hours for them to come out and get my canopy from the front out here when we try to protest. Now, I can understand the canopies and everything else outside of businesses help them keep them dry and everything, but most businesses have them out there for the smokers and, well, coming from somebody whose uncle is dying in the VA hospital right now of lung cancer, I don't think that they need canopies. If we cannot have protests and homeless have the same level of enforcement as they do for the homeless, I think that it's against the not only the civil laws and the constitutional laws to discriminate against people, no matter who they are. What we have to do is we have to come to an agreement about stuff like this, and if people have canopies outside, they have to, you know, get a permit for them and make sure that they are anchored well, because coming from 20 years of down in Quartzsite, Arizona during the winter, I've seen those things take off and hurt not only people but businesses and places. If they're doing this and the police will not enforce it, and I have everybody from the downtown precinct commander to the local people on the street down there on video saying no, they will not enforce the law. That is ludicrous, that we are not enforcing a law against one person and yet another. I understand the small businesses. It's a win-win for the city because you make the activists happy, and it's a revenue source. My brother owns a restaurant. He has to pay for his sidewalk, A board, and his tables. So if people want to set up, and I mean, there's some clubs down there that have 4 canopies out in front and like 100 feet of the barricade fencing, especially in Old Town in front of the Dixie Tavern. I've had trouble even getting through there on the weekends in my car because it's not wide enough. It's one of the narrowest sidewalks in the city. Same as outside Voodoo Donuts, and you can't get past that when they're busy. I'm just saying, if these people are going to do this stuff, they need to get permits for it. Or if we apply for a permit, I mean, I've got a permit across the street to protest on federal land because the city won't give it to us on state land for the Occupy. What we need to do is we need to do this. Equal enforcement. It's like me. 20 months ago, I was attacked by 5 people down on 6th Avenue. 15 months ago, in front of 5 police officers, I said, that's the guy that did it. The officer went back to his thing, came back and said, well, there's one witness said that he didn't do it, so we're going to let him go.
So your time's up, sir. Thank you. Appreciate it. All right, that gets us to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any items to pull from the consent agenda? All right.
Item 169 was pulled by the Bureau.
Okay.
So they have a substitute to present.
Okay, so that goes to the regular agenda. All right, Sue, can you please call the vote on the consent agenda?
Fritz.
Aye.
Fish.
Aye.
Salzman.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have a time certain. Can you please read the title for item number 162?
Reappoint David Widmark for a term to expire March 19, 2016, and appoint Benita Lagarza for a term to expire January 13, 2014, to the Home Forward Board of Commissioners.
Commissioner Nick Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. It is my honor this morning to present 2 candidates for your consideration for appointment to the Board of Commissioners of Home Forward, formerly known as the Housing Authority of Portland. I'd like to invite a number of people forward at this point. First, Harriet Cormack, who is the current chair of the board. Next, David Widmark, who is a current board member and is seeking reappointment. And third, Benita Lagarza, who is seeking her first appointment. Anita, do you want to join us? Are you? And Anita Yap, I'll just acknowledge, who's the deputy director here standing in for Steve Rudman. I'm going to turn over the proceedings to our distinguished chair, but first I'd like to just welcome David. David, as you know, is currently a Gresham City Councilor, elected to position number one in November of 2008. And in January of 2009, he was appointed to the board of the Housing Authority of Portland. Today, he seeks reappointment. And I'd like to welcome Benita LaGarza. Benita currently is a resident of Home Forward and a member of the Resident Advisory Committee. I would say most conspicuous on her resume, she is pursuing a degree in administration of justice from Portland State University. She is a single mother who has raised four children, and she has put herself through school, and she is also an active member of the National Low Income Housing Coalition. We welcome you both, and I would like to turn over the proceedings to Harriet.
Thank you very much. I'm Harriet Cormack, Chair of Home Forward. I'm pleased to ask for your approval of, or confirmation of these two new reappointment and a new member of our board. David, as you hear, has a considerable resume that you've got before you. He's been on the board and been a superb member of several committees and really put his shoulder to the wheel. The Gresham City Government and Mayor Bemis had concluded that they wanted an elected official to be their representative on the Housing Authority of Portland, as it was then known, so that there was more connection between policy of Gresham and the authority. And we have so much confidence in David and hope that you would approve him that we actually elected him vice chair. So please, please, please. And in the interest of consolidating things, it just became recently known that Amy Pico, who was our resident commissioner, because of the success of her small business, she didn't have time to be on the board. And so we had a process 2 years ago to interview candidates for the position of resident commissioner, and Benita was one of the finalists that we interviewed at that time. So in the interest of continuity and quick action, we reached back into that existing pool and selected Benita because we felt she was very well qualified and has had a couple of years of service on the Resident Advisory Committee and would be a top drawer appointee to our board. So with that, very much endorse these people to be joining our Board of Commissioners.
Thank you very much. David, would you care to say a few words?
Sure. Just want to say that, you know, my 3 years as serving on the Board of Commissioners, that we have accomplished a lot. We have gone through a strategic plan. We've also gone through name change, and we have also broadened the perspective of what we provide to over 14,000 households across this county. And I just want to say that it's a pleasure serving, and I don't look at it that I'm from Gresham. I look at it as I represent the East County, and that to me is what really speaks to who I am and who I want to serve on this commission.
Thank you. Benita?
Well, prior to getting involved with the Resident Advisory Committee, I was on a National Law Project Committee and went to Washington, D.C., representing Portland. And at that engagement, I realized what a AAA housing authority we have and thought it was really important that our residents know that and that that engagement continue. And that's what brought me here today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And it's also an opportunity to thank Harriet for all your great leadership on this in this organization for a very long time. It's much appreciated.
Thank you.
Unless there's additional council discussion or anyone wishes to testify on this matter, Sue, would you please call the vote?
Fritz. Well, thank you very much for your willingness to serve. This is a huge volunteer commitment for all of you and so important, and greatly appreciate the thought that's gone into the selections, the ongoing assistance of Home Forward, and Commissioner Fish's leadership. Aye.
Fish. I want to thank both of you for your willingness to serve. As a former board member of then Housing Authority of Portland, I know how much time and energy is required to be an effective board member. And so we thank you for stepping up and serving. Just to remind my colleagues and the public, we have at least four major projects and developments that we're currently working on. The redevelopment of the former Hillsdale Terrace in Southwest, which for which Home Forward won another Hope 6 grant. I believe the new name is Stevens Creek Crossing?
Indeed.
Okay. So we will be collaborating with you in that endeavor, and I believe it will, when completed, be one of the greenest public housing developments in the country. We're grateful for the work that Home Forward did as the lead developer and manager of Bug Clark Commons. We are appreciative of the work and the advocacy at the table helping us implement our Fair Housing Action Plan. And recently, the Housing Bureau's director announced the three recipients of the most recent NOFA, Notice of Funds Availability, that we issued. And LifeWorks Northwest received funding to do a new development in Inner Northeast. And I understand that Home Forward is the development partner in that development, which is terribly important. So for those and all the other things that we're involved with, we're grateful. And Harriet, to echo what the mayor said, we thank you for your leadership. And welcome to the board. Aye.
Saltzman.
Well, I want to, I guess since you've elected David vice chair, I guess it's too late to raise any objections on my part. Actually, I'm very pleased David has agreed for another term. Benita, welcome to the board. And Harriet, thank you for all your work. Aye.
Leonard.
Thank you for your service. Aye.
Adams.
Thank you for your willingness to serve. We appreciate it. Aye. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. That is our time certain. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 177?
177. Authorize an agreement and memorandum of understanding with the Department of Treasury, Internal Revenue Service, Criminal Investigation to allow for reimbursement of city expenses.
And it isn't a vote. We'll get a presentation.
It will be a vote.
Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning, Mary Adams, commissioners. My name is Eric Hendricks. I'm an assistant chief of the Portland Police Bureau. And thanks for allowing us, Commander Ed Brumfield from the Detective Division, and I had to come today to discuss the proposed ordinance that would formalize our involvement with the Internal Revenue Service, Criminal Investigation Division, Oregon Southwest Washington Financial Crimes Task Force. You have to excuse me, I'm fighting a very bad cold. We know that the Police Bureau has been involved with the federal government, involved in a wide range of criminal investigations with the federal government, with bank robberies, human trafficking, online child pornography, gun possession, gun trafficking, drug distribution, interstate transportation of stolen property, and other crimes for many years. A number of years ago, members of the Drug and Vice Division and the Detective Division began meeting informally with representatives from the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Division, investigating money laundering, bank fraud, and other crimes involving financial institutions. At that point, our involvement with the IRS task force was informal. In January of 2009, the task force became a formal entity, and up until that point, our participation was still voluntary. But this memorandum, it proposes to make our change our membership, if you will, participation from being voluntary to formal. And I think it's a good thing for the Portland Police Bureau, and I think it's a good thing for Portland, for public safety here in the citizens of the City of Portland. Now I'll introduce Commander Ed Brumfield of the Detective Division and give us some more details if you'd like.
Good morning. Through the participation in the IRS task force, our Detective Cruthers, has worked closely with not only the IRS, but other investigators from other agencies in the metro area, and has been able to readily couple her efforts with those of other agencies in the U.S. Attorney's Office to apprehend perpetrators of crimes that directly impact the citizens of Portland. Her involvement has been crucial to the team and their ability to expand the scope of cases pursued. Because federal agencies working independently of such partnerships are typically limited to investigating only the highest echelon of criminal activity. Successful conclusions of these cases not only protect citizens of Portland from further harm, but they also have allowed for the possibility of restitution for victims where monies were recaptured. Examples of such investigations on which Detective Crothers has worked included deceitful mortgage rescue operations and mortgage fraud. The criminal activities she investigated caused millions of dollars of foreclosures and personal losses that negatively affected the Portland housing market, as well as citizens' individual credit and net worth. One particular task force case in which Detective Crothers was instrumental targeted individuals who were perpetrating a significant foreclosure rescue scam. Victims included banks, lending institutions, and elderly citizens, some of whom lost their home, were left homeless because of the result of the fraud. Through her diligence and collaboration with the task force members, she successfully concluded this case by preventing these criminals from victimizing more innocent parties. Schemes designed to bilk trusting residences, residents and businesses out of their hard-earned money is another area of criminal activity targeted by the task force. It is well known that fraudsters prey upon people from all walks of life and are all too often successful in their efforts. One such case in which Detective Crothers recently worked involved a person who owned a chain of mechanic shops in the Portland area. The investigation revealed that this person had been investigated in the state of California and it ultimately was forced to close all of his businesses there due to unethical business practices, including bait and switch scams against his customers. The suspect then moved to Oregon and opened mechanic shops in our area. The task force determined the Portland residents may have been victims of the same bait and switch scam to which California had been subjected. Not only were they able to address that issue, they determined that the owner had been defrauding his own employees by not paying their income and Social Security taxes. This case resulted in a large monetary seizure, a large portion of which was returned for the purpose of paying off the debts to those that were defrauded. These are just a few of the examples of the cases Detective Crothers has been involved in with the task force. They have been successful in assisting in cases involving elder abuse, human trafficking, drug dealing, robbery, bankruptcy fraud, securities fraud, embezzlement, intellectual property crimes, identity theft, nonprofit scams, and Ponzi schemes. Many of these crimes would not have been investigated due to limited resources. As you have heard in the past, we are a very lean organization, which requires us to maximize our investigative efforts the best we can. By partnering with the criminal investigators of the IRS and other local agencies, we can become part of a team which can more effectively address many financial crimes affecting the community and the entire metro area. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I do have some questions in it that are relative to the reimbursement. I certainly appreciate what you've described as the problem and us dedicating resources at the local level to help solve that problem, and I support that. What I am concerned about, not unlike other task forces we've been involved in, is our resources. And particularly, as you all know, this budget year, the Police Bureau, along with the Fire Bureau and all other general fund bureaus, are being asked to submit cuts of 4%, 6%, and 8%. Those are significant cuts. So the issue isn't whether or not this is an important function. It's where is it on the continuum of public safety responsibilities we have, whether it's responding to fires or break-ins or vehicle accidents. And I note in the reimbursement agreement with the IRS, we can submit request for overtime reimbursement, but that is even limited to $15,000 a year. So I'm concerned that we're dedicating police officers to a function that, albeit an important function, is a function that has at least some focus dedicated to it by the federal government, while simultaneously we're looking at eliminating entire units within the Police Bureau that perform I don't want to get into weighing which functions you all perform that are more important than others, but certainly more street crime, in-your-face kinds of issues that you're charged to protect the citizens from. So the concern I have is,
can we, have we, or are there other jurisdictions that assigned officers to this task force that are completely reimbursed? And if not, why not?
Mr.
If I could just add one more thing.
You
what makes this a little more distinct is I had the Revenue Bureau for a while, for an example, and I came to the council early in 2003 and asked for authority to hire an attorney, to ask for the authority to hire staff to go after people who weren't paying their business license taxes. And I promised that the next year I wouldn't ask for that to be reauthorized if I didn't more than cover the expenses of that additional staff by the increased revenue. And we did. We more than generated more revenue than what the costs were to add the staff to go after those folks. And I see this as kind of the same way. We're generating revenue for the federal government by getting to people to pay taxes, whether it be through seizures or whatever, that they otherwise would not receive. And so I'm having a hard time getting my arms around why we couldn't at least get our costs reimbursed to us beyond $15,000 a year.
Yeah, Commissioner, that's a very good question. And if I can have the opportunity to respond, always it's a matter of prioritization. We've the chief and I and the other assistant chiefs and Commander Brumfield, when we were preparing this year's budget, we went through the detective division virtually position by position to prioritize their tasks and determine where does the citizens of the city of Portland get their best bang for the buck. And obviously our core mission is a response to emergency crimes or calls for service, and we're committed to that. But immediately secondary to that is the investigation of major crimes, and that includes person crimes, the things that we commonly think about: robberies, homicides, rapes, violent crimes, and burglaries. But the major crimes involving fraud are huge, and over the years we've seen, I think, criminals are opportunists, and over the years I think we've seen the pattern of crime change from violent crime. Violent crime in Portland is down. Portland is a very safe city, and we have about half the rate of violent crime that we had in 2000. So we think that a lot of those criminals, at least many of them, perhaps if I may, the smarter ones, have shifted their emphasis over to financial crime. And one thing that we provide the federal government, be it any federal law enforcement, we provide them with local knowledge that's invaluable. Many federal agents, they're here on a rotational basis, much like the military. They'll do 3 or 4 years, and then they'll move on to another assignment. And Detective Crothers has been here, I think, about 20 years.
And I get all that.
Yeah.
My question is, and I get the value of that, my question is not to explain to me why this is important. I understand the importance of it, and I certainly understand the nexus to having a local official that understands the demographics and the dynamics of our city that a federal person may not, having been planted here from, say, Virginia. That makes sense. My question is, why can't we be reimbursed for the total cost? And if we can't, is this truly something that we're willing to dedicate resources to when we're looking at laying off 40 to 50 cops? And I have a real doubt about that in my mind.
You know, I think if we look at $15,000 reimbursement for overtime, I can't tell you dollar for dollar what Detective Crothers incurs every year, but I would guess that we're relatively close to breaking even.
For overtime, but you're talking about dedicating officers full-time, right?
Yes.
So that's my question isn't just the overtime, it's the cost of an officer dedicated full-time that potentially we could use in one of those other areas, the resources we could use in other areas, given the cuts that we're facing.
I agree.
Like I say, if they said, we think this is so important, we're going to pay the salary, pension costs, and overtime, I'd vote for this and sing the praises of the IRS. That's not a question for me. It's we're going to make a lot of hard choices here coming up soon, and this is this is the beginning of a number of hard choices. And I don't want to have to vote against it, but I'd also like to see some signal before we approve this that maybe there could be an attempt to negotiate what the IRS total reimbursement for the cost of dedicating an officer to these functions.
That's something we can discuss with the IRS. Unfortunately, my experience in dealing with task force, and now, Commissioner, you've had, I'm sure, considerable involvement as well, is that the standard reimbursement for overtime, sometimes a vehicle is thrown in, but it's unusual for the federal government, when we participate in task force, to cover salaries, although it's certainly something we could look into.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to clarify something just to make clear. We're not working with the civil part of IRS mm-hmm. that collects taxes and stuff. Right. We're working with the criminal investigators, and a lot of the cases that we are investigating are cases that directly, in fact, all the cases that we investigate directly affect Portland residents. They're cases that the IRS would not be able to investigate without our assistance, without our participation in the task force, because they wouldn't rise to that level. As far as our bang for the buck, I guess I look, as manager of the detective division, look at this as not giving up one investigator. I get four or five investigators back because they work as a team in the metro area. And fraud cases, criminal cases, human trafficking cases, all are metro-wide. They affect Portland, but they also affect the surrounding area. By being a participant in this task force, we bring those resources together to more effectively deal with major crime issues as far as the money laundering and those crimes that I discussed.
And that's what makes this distinct in my mind, is they, I understand that this isn't like somebody didn't file a tax.
Correct.
To 1040. Right. But they seize assets, and they mm-hmm. seize assets, and they sell them. They sometimes recoup tens of millions of dollars. And so there is a revenue-generating function that's unique with this particular mm-hmm. task force that maybe
right.
doesn't
Which
exist
is,
with the JTTF or other task forces that we belong to. So there seems to me a little clearer justification for
those. It's important to note those seizures are shared amongst the members of the task force. So those cases that were predominantly worked by Detective Carruthers, the majority of those seizures that come to that are seized come back to the City of Portland. They come back to the Portland Police
what
Bureau.
What percentage do we
It depends on the amount of involvement in the investigation.
Which have we received in the past?
I can help with that. If it's a case that is developed solely by the Portland Police Bureau, we would recoup 80% of the funds. And without having the fingers or the immediate figures at my fingertips, we have about $750,000 in our federal forfeiture account now, and that's something we use for a wide variety of expenses within the police bureau. They're not budgeted annually. From the purchase of most recently of a $10,000 German Shepherd for the canine unit. I never thought I'd see the day where dogs cost $10,000.
Nice dog.
He better be a good dog.
Wow.
But they cost $10,000, and we don't include those expenses in our annual budget.
Mm-hmm.
We replaced an engine and airplane. They're, once again, airplanes are like boats. They're very expensive. That was $25,000.
Do we generate enough in the amount that we receive as our proportion to cover the salaries and benefits of the officers dedicated to this task force?
Yes, Commissioner, we do, and then some.
Would you support an amendment that would require that money seized first cover the expenses of the officers dedicated to the task force, and then whatever excess is left you can put into the fund that you use for other purposes?
You know, that's something that I would definitely discuss with Chief Reese and folks from the IRS. My only concern is at times cases, you may go a year and you may not have a significant case, and that you may not cover the costs, the salary and retirement benefits.
I would get the flexibility of that.
But sure.
If we could, I don't know how you feel about this, Mayor, but if we could postpone this until you could craft such an amendment, I'd be much more amenable to supporting it. And I would just tell you, you know, 3 or 4 years ago in a different budget environment, I wouldn't be raising these issues. And maybe next year, whoever's sitting here for me won't feel the need to raise these issues because of the budget. But I'm going through right now, and we're talking closing 3 to 4 fire stations in addition to a bunch of staff. And I know you're being similarly tasked at your level to come up with those cuts. And these are, and so for me, I'm looking at this through that prism, not trying to make your life any harder than it already is, but share some of the pain that we're going through right now.
I appreciate that.
Commissioner Salson?
So as I understand it, the dedication of a detective is, in return for the dedication of the detective, we're eligible for $15,000 in overtime. I mean, that's the basic.
Well, it's two things.
And the share of what's confiscated.
Exactly. And then the share of our share of whatever funds are seized in the course of the investigation.
And we do not get that kind of recoupment of funds if we're just an informal participant like we are now?
No, we would not. No. And it's much the same as our involvement with the other federal agencies, including the Drug Enforcement Administration. If we work a case with the Drug Enforcement Administration, for example, or other federal law enforcement, and it's obviously the drug cases next to the financial crimes where we see the most significant seizures. If we seize, you know, several hundred thousand dollars, if it's our case alone, the federal government is not interested in those forfeited funds. But we are, obviously, because, once again, we can use them to pay for a wide variety of expenses that are not covered in our budget. So we would get, once again, if it's our case alone working with the DEA, for example, we would recoup 80% of whatever is seized.
So I guess since I have the commander of the detective division and an assistant chief in front of me, and we're talking about detectives, you know, I, for one, am very concerned about cutting two child abuse detectives. I think that's not money. That's a wise investment. And I think, you know, as you said, violent crime is way down, but, you know, things like child abuse, you know, we don't get any federal money recovered from those, but they are important crimes. They impact young people for the rest of their lives. And they're horrendous too. And I know, you know, the detectives that choose to dedicate their careers to child abuse are saints in my book. So what is the rationale for cutting two child abuse detectives, given the overwhelming demand in that area?
I did recognize you for the purposes of discussing this issue, and we will have an opportunity to have those discussions through the budget process. But this is, if you want to ask a question about the issue in front of us, I'll recognize you again. But we will dig into that very deeply in the budget process. I'm going through, and we will all be going through the budgets in the future, and I'd like that discussion, the answer to your question, to be done in context of the entire budget process.
Okay. I mean, the preface was that the two of you had sat down and gone through every detective position carefully to figure out where it goes, and that was the basis of why I asked, what's the rationale for cutting two child abuse team detectives?
Yeah. To be clear, my goal is to not have any cuts in sworn positions to police and fire, and you all are going to help me with that.
But that does, Commissioner Saltzman's question, while maybe not on point with this particular subject, does raise the larger issue that I'm trying to make the point of.
We're gonna hold. I'm gonna take your advice and hold it over. There's aspects to this as well that I'd like you to take a private briefing, because there are aspects of this that we don't necessarily want to talk about in public. For example, there are key opportunities that we are trying to grow with the IRS as it relates to dealing with financial or the money-making aspects of violent gangs. So let me finish. And so we will talk those through for those of you that want to take the individual briefing. And I definitely will take under advisement your suggestion that the money go to pay for the officers first. What I need to look at, just so that we all have that, which I think is a useful suggestion, that we see how much money on average comes in, so that we're also not. I don't want to take comfort in something that isn't going to have a big impact, and I'd rather, if council doesn't want to sign up for this, then council doesn't want to sign up for this. In other words, I would love, when I saw the budget, when I read it this weekend in detail, it was about $800,000 in the bank, and that would be used up. I just don't know how much we get each year on an average year. So we'll get that to you, and we'll bring this back to council for further discussion.
And I'm happy to look at all that, but again, I'm less focused on the particular issues that you all are going to be obviously investigating with this task force than I am the bigger picture that we are. I mean, we can't take each of these issues and treat them as though they are independent of the larger budget question, whether they're the child abuse team or whether they're officers assigned to a district. I mean, these are all interconnected decisions that we're making, and I know you understand that, Mayor Adams. So for me, I can't and won't make independent decisions like this to wall off for whoever general fund resources without further understanding the implication in the larger budget picture. So whether it's you get a percentage of the forfeited assets, or you go back to the IRS and say, look, we're having a really tough time. We can help you generate a lot of money if you can help us with the salaries. however that happens. I'm not saying it has to happen a certain way, but if I'm forced by anybody at this point to vote on basically walling off positions that are out of the general fund, I'm not going to support it until we have a bigger understanding of what we're dealing with. And I appreciate your commitment and your track record of protecting the uniformed services in the city has been stellar. I'm not questioning that. But I also know what I know when I read the numbers, and you know, nobody here can make a commitment to keep all of the uniformed services funded at the level they are without some income coming in that we don't know about yet. So,
and that's why I wanted to make sure that going further down the path that you pointed to, I wanted to make sure that council had in front of them in the last 5 years or so how much of the forfeiture, what was the value of the forfeiture money, to see if it's, and for you to have that in front of you and in front of me before we decide we want to sign up for this commitment at all. So I'm actually agreeing with you and going further, because it might, my impression is that it can really ebb and flow, and it just might not be something that we want to sign up with right now. We do get a percentage of the forfeiture money. I don't have the impression that it's a consistent large amount, which speaks to your point. The IRS, I will definitely talk to the IRS, as will the chief, on the 15%. I think they're trying to manage expectations around that that's not likely. But that's why we'll hold it over, and we'll dig into it. I think the conversation is really good and important, and we'll hold it over to get all the information you asked.
You take public testimony today?
Yeah. Yeah. Anyone signed but to testify?
We have one testifier. It's Dan Handelman.
Mary Adams, Commissioners, thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor Adams and Commissioners. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and I'm very glad that this item provoked a discussion on City Council. It originally appeared on the consent agenda. As it originally appeared on the consent agenda last year, listed by Chief Reese as a routine item. And we just heard testimony from Chief Hendricks that this is the first time this has been formalized since the Bureau has been working with the IRS since 2009. So this is by no means routine. It's another collaboration with the local law enforcement and the federal law enforcement agency, which actually, you know, to its credit, the agreement has written into it provisions that the Oregon law has to be followed by the Portland Police. But we do not see any provision to enforce that. We had a long discussion about this with the Joint Terrorism Task Force. We're going to have that discussion again next week when the report comes out, I'm sure. But there's nothing to say how the, well, in this case, single detective that's involved in the IRS task force is being held to those 181 laws. So I'm hoping now that you're taking more time on this that maybe that discussion can happen as well. And it's also not routine in the sense that, you know, we had never heard about this collaboration between the Bureau and the IRS until last year when the previous consent agenda item came forward. So do appreciate, Mr. Mayor, you putting this on the regular agenda for discussion. Another question that came up, and this came up, I think, also with the agreement between the Bureau and the DEA that was passed a few years ago, is how federal seizure laws differ from Oregon's seizure laws. And I know we had ballot measures that changed how much percentages of those kind of funds can be brought by law enforcement, and I don't know if that's been discussed. It was quite a shock for me to hear. I think that the chief said $700,000+ in a bank account that does not appear in the Bureau's annual budget. Does that mean that the council has no oversight over the money that gets brought in from these seizures? That seems very a very interesting issue that I hope also gets more discussion here, especially as the concerns are being raised here about the limited budget and the police get to decide if they want to spend it on an airplane or a dog instead of more personnel or something else that might benefit the community. So thank you again for allowing the public testimony on this.
Thanks. Sue, would you please? We're going to, unless there are objections, hold it over until next week. All right, can you please read the title for item number 178?
Vacate a portion of Southwest 46th Avenue and portion of Southwest Florida Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations.
Who's here to present?
Good morning. Lance Lindahl, Bureau of Transportation, Right-of-Way Acquisition. I'm going to hand it over, the presentation part here shortly, to representatives from St. Luke Lutheran Church. They're the petitioner, and they're also the party that would receive all of the property within the proposed vacation area. It's also my understanding there may be some questions about this street vacation case. It's a vacation of a portion of Southwest 46th Avenue and Southwest Florida Street. And joining me here today from the Bureau of Transportation is Wendy Colley from Transportation Development Review and April Bertelson and Stuart Gwynn from Transportation Planning. And we'll be available later to answer questions you may have. Go ahead.
David Knapp, KNAPP. Mayor Adams and Commissioners, thank you for hearing us today. I am the pastor of St. Luke Lutheran Church in Southwest Portland, right near Gabriel Park, and have been a pastor there for 20 years. And I bring you greetings on this holy day in the church year, at least, Ash Wednesday, the beginning of the season of Lent that leads us to the joy of Easter morning. I speak in favor of the street vacations that you have in front of you for two reasons. One, that it will enhance our St. Luke ministry, and secondly, that it will enhance our neighbors and our neighborhood. A quick sketch, we're a congregation of about 1,300 members. That means we have about 521 people in worship on every Sunday morning, which I gotta say is pretty good for Lutherans, at least. My Jewish and Muslim brothers and sisters, I think, do that better than we do, but we're going with 521. We're the St. Luke is the largest Lutheran church in the city of Portland. We're the second largest in the state of Oregon. We have a median age of 42, which means that our largest demographic is 0 to 9, and our second largest is 10 to 19. And this presents all kinds of wonderful and exciting problems, one of them having to do with space and the other having to do with safety. So one of the reasons we're asking for the street vacation is because my wife and I have three children. The youngest is in fourth grade, and in his fourth grade Sunday school class at St. Luke, there are 28 kids. We don't have a room for 28 kids, so we end up using the one across the street. And in order to do so, we walk across that barrier, so there are some safety issues concerning that. We have been around since 1968. We intend to be around for another 68 years or so, and we all do so under the umbrella of worship and connect and serve. Part of that serving part has to do with giving away 22% of everything that's put in the offering plate every year to those outside of our congregation, and to volunteer our time with Transition Projects Homeless Shelter, which, thanks to you, has a beautiful new building. A warming shelter at St. Luke, preparing kids for school every summer with giving items away, West Women's Shelter, Hillsdale Terrace, and others. So a quick sketch of St. Luke, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today.
Mayor Adams and commissioners, thank you for the opportunity again. My name is Steve Milam. That's M-I-L-E-H-A-M. I'm a member of the congregation, and I've also been working on the church's master plan. So I wanted to orient you a little bit towards the needs of the project and also our physical constraints there and the ability to expand. You'll see in front of you an aerial map of the of our site. St. Luke Lutheran Church is labeled there about in the middle of the aerial photo. Southwest Vermont Street is located on the north side. Southwest 45th is on the east side. And just to the east of that, you'll see the Southwest Community Center. Due south of our church is St. John Fisher Roman Catholic Church. And the access to our property is via California Street and Southwest 46th Avenue that connects to Vermont. Our buildings include the Sanctuary Building, which also has offices and some classrooms. A Shalom Center to the east of that, across 46th, which has the safety issues that David had mentioned. A Vermont House to the north of that, which was a residence that we purchased in order to serve some of our expansion for classroom space. And a retail center, which was purchased in order to get some additional space for us to be able to expand and continue to serve the community. This is a view from Vermont Street looking up south.
Was the retail center on the corner of 45th, or is it the
no,
retail
I'm sorry.
Center
it's,
that's to the north of your church?
Due north of our church. Okay. That's correct. Thank you.
Okay.
Fano Creek, you'll notice just north of our parking area, Fano Creek is a buffer between ourselves and the residences, and it forms quite a buffer through our whole property at this point. And as we mentioned before, Southwest 46th Avenue bisects our site, separating the St. Luke Lutheran Church from the Shalom Center and Vermont Street. You'll also notice there are only three residences on California. Those three use that access, but everything else is pretty much access for our church from both California and 46th. This view shows the view from Vermont Street looking at Southwest 46th. You'll notice it's a gravel road, unimproved street, and it rises about 15 feet as you look due south towards the church in the background. About halfway up that street, looking back down towards Vermont, you'll see the unimproved road and that retail building, Dan, that you mentioned, and the Vermont house off to the right. And you'll see Fano Creek starts to show on the right side. There's a little bridge that goes through there on the right and also starts on the left of this photo as well. And standing here and turning 90 degrees to the right, you'll look at what is officially Southwest Florida Street right-of-way. The Fano Creek is to the left of that. The right-of-way is there, and that has been deemed not available to be improved as a street due to the slope challenges on that site. So as you can see from this diagram, we have a number of pieces of property that are separated by 46th, bisected, and also that environmental zone that runs all across the north of our property. And so any ability to expand our building itself is somewhat limited in space.
So before you move off that, the street, the unnamed street to the west of your property, is that actually a right-of-way?
That is a driveway from St. John Fisher out towards Vermont Avenue. I do not believe it's a roadway, but I'm not positive on that.
Yeah, that's a private driveway. It is not public right-of-way. The closest public right-of-way would be on 49th Avenue.
Thank you.
The other thing that this map doesn't show is the fact that we are topographically challenged, if you will. We have some severe slope issues. We've met with a number of different churches and found that the best way to expand a facility is to expand in a connected way and also on the same level. That avoids safety issues. It also allows centralized operations, and if we were to add a commercial kitchen, for example, it would allow the kitchen to serve the entire property without having to take the services outside and into another building. We are somewhat limited by the topography in order to provide a new fellowship hall and commercial kitchen on the same level, in that the only place we could really do that is over towards what is called the Shalom Center to the right.
And again, before you move off that slide, Lance, could you help me with California? California. Mm-hmm. You're not proposing to vacate?
No, California would remain. In fact, as a condition of this approval, California would remain to serve those three residences, and a 70-foot cul-de-sac would be provided at the end of California, right in front of our property.
Thank you.
This slide shows an early concept plan for how we would propose to expand the church should the street right-of-way vacation be approved. As you can see, we'd have to expand over in an area that's on the same level with our sanctuary. The green represents a fellowship hall, and just off of that would be a commercial kitchen to help serve the fellowship hall and therefore help us serve in all the programs that we've mentioned earlier. The pedestrian connection was a condition of the approval. That is shown off to the right in gray. It's a 16-foot wide right-of-way dedication, and we're in full support of that. We accept that recommendation, and that would allow the pedestrian connection to continue. And our existing connection on 46 for pedestrians would be maintained until that connection were constructed. As you can see here, Amanda, as you noted, there would be a cul-de-sac down at the end of California, 70-foot, and then vehicles would continue along the south side of our property and circulate around the building as before. This image shows an aerial of a 3D model. We'll be seeing some views of it in a minute, but you can see how potentially the building could expand. The building off to the right, the big building, would be the fellowship hall with potential kitchen-connected, commercial kitchen, and the narthex that would connect the two buildings would expand out there, allowing a lot of fellowship between members and catching up on issues that the programs that the city that the members are performing on a regular basis, and again would eliminate that safety issue of having to cross the street.
And is there a reason? Oh, I know there is a reason. Tell me the reason why you couldn't do the expansion in the other direction to the west.
In the other direction, we have our parking field, which is required. We have to meet the needs of the congregation for parking the facility for all the different functions. In addition, that would require that the fellowship hall would then fall on a lower level due to the grades. It's about a full grade drop down towards that side.